So we are beginning Be'ezras Hashem Yisborach, a new Zman, a new year, a new Masechta. I think we all remember, however old we are or young we are, we all remember the first day in school. There's always this excitement, as long as the teacher still thought that we were a good student, which was always fun. It didn't last, in my case, for very long, but it was always a special feeling in the beginning of the year of Hischadshus. A brand new Aschola, everybody's in the same place. And this is the way that we begin the new year. Chodesh Cheshvan, many ask, why is it that it's devoid of Yomim Tovim and Al Derech HaPshat, even though there's many answers, but Al Derech HaPshat, because the many, many, many lessons of Chodesh Tishri need time to be absorbed. Chodesh Tishri is the most action-packed Chodesh of the year. Not just with many Yomim Tovim, but with different themes. Rosh Hashanah is not the same as Yom Kippur, which is not the same as Sukkot, which is not the same as Simchas Torah, not the same as Hoshana Rabbah. So there's so much to absorb that now's the time. But above all, what we said for 40 days, 50 days actually, Acha Sha'alti Me'is Hashem, we said all of Elul all the way to Hoshana Rabbah, Shifti Be'is Hashem. So sitting together every morning as we do, being able to learn is a tremendous zechus, is really a kiyum of that tefillah, and we should forever be grateful that we are zeicher to do this. We are beginning Be'ezras Hashem Yisborach, Masechta Sanhedrin. Perhaps really, I apologize, I really should have sent out an email in advance for those of you who are preparing the Gemara, which I hope is everybody, the way that this should have been learned. You will have noticed, those who have had a look at it, that rather strangely, in most other Masechtas, you have a Mishnah and then a Gemara, whether it's two daf or three daf or sometimes more, and then you get to the next Mishnah and then some more Gemara and then the next Mishnah and some more Gemara. In this case, in Sanhedrin, the entire Mishnayos of the first Perek are all brought in the first Mishnah. So daf based on the Aleph, there's actually no Gemara, it's all Mishnah. And in fact, it takes you over to that base, on the base, to the fifth line, and then you get to the Gemara. Why that's the case, I'm not quite sure. It could be the simple reason is, as we're going to see in a moment, because there are so many different examples of how many you need in a bez, and it just goes through all the cases. Therefore, unlike other Masechtas, it's not different subjects in the different Mishnayos. It's all one subject, just as so many examples.
Gemara first published in the 1500s by a non-Jew named Bamberg, and maybe this is just the way he thought he would organize it.
Could be. It does make sense, like I said before, because it's not different subjects. It's all one lengthy subject, and that is how many dayonim you need on the Bezdin for the various cases. Now, the way that we're going to learn this, rather than learning the entire Mishnah, which, as I mentioned, is not really a Mishnah, it's Mishnayos, we're not going to do that. For the simple reason is because some of the lengthy Mishnah, we're only going to come back to learning the connected and relevant Gemara in a few weeks' time. So it would make more sense to do it piece by piece. So we're going to jump around a little bit. Hopefully it'll make sense. And Be'ezras Hashem, we will start now, and we should all have a Zman of much, much, much Hatzlacha Mitz Hashem. Dine Momonois Bishloisha. So, of course, if we're learning Sanhedrin, then, as the name of the Masechta suggests, we're talking about Sanhedrin. Tosas immediately points out, in the very first Tosas, that Sanhedrin is the follow-up of the three Bovas, Bova Kama, Bova Metzia, Bova Basra. If you look at that top Tosas, there is only one Tosas, look at Tosas. Tosfos says, we'll just learn the first couple of lines. Dine momenus b'shloisha. Achar sheshono dinim. After we've learned many dinim b'tlosa bovi in the three bovas, bova kama, bova metzia, bova basra, mashmienu, now we're being taught, b'kamo donim oisom. How many judge them? So after we're taught, this is the halacha, and that's the halacha, and this is the halacha, and that's the halacha, well now, we're really going, as it were, in reverse order, because first we're told what the halacha is. That's bava kama, bava metzia, bava basra. And then we're told what the formation of the Beis Din is, how many people, how many Dayanim needed to assemble together in order actually to arrive at that particular Psak Halacha. Okay, so back into the Mishnah. Dinei Momonais Bishloisha. Monetary matters are decided by a Beis Din of three Dayanim. First Rashi on the Omud, first Rashi in the Perek, first Rashi in the Masechta. Dinei Momonais Bishloisha B'Gemara Yalfinon Lehu. The Gemara will derive this from a Drasha. Obviously, Rashi is coming to answer the obvious question. Why should it be three? Why not two? Why not one? Why not 50? Where do you get the number three from? Gezelois v'chavolois bishloisha. Gezelois, so we would have simply translated, although we'll see how Rashi does so in a moment, theft. And chavolois, chavolois is injuries, bishloisha. Once again, anybody who's learning the Mishnah.
Uh-oh, he's gone.
So what happened there? No idea what happened there. Obviously, when learning the Mishnah, we're immediately going to have the obvious problem. What's the obvious problem? If you just now told me that Dinei Momonos is Bishloisha, so why would you need to spell out Gezelos v'Chavolos is Bishloisha? Those are Dinei Momonos. So one of those two expressions could have l'chaira been missed out. Either tell me as a So either tell me that Dinei Momonos Bishloisha as a general rule, and then I don't need the details, or give me the details, but I don't need the rule. But certainly, I don't need a repetition. So let's have a look at Rashi. Rashi, again, points this out. Top line. Gezelos. What's Gezelos? So Rashi does not translate immediately, as we perhaps might do, and say that Gezel, well, it's very obvious. Gezel is Gezel. We all know what Gezel means. Gezel is just theft. So although Rashi agrees it's theft, but he gives examples of what particular theft we're talking about. And he says, Gezelos, says Rashi, is kaifer b'pikadon. What's kaifer b'pikadon? If somebody has a deposit that was made to him, the owner comes back and claims his deposit back, and he denies that he ever had it. That is called gezel. Now, why is that called gezel? Says Rashi, koifer b'pikadon, denying the deposit, der mishe sholach boy yad. Because literally translated, when he sends his hand, but it means when he misappropriated it, have a gazlan, that's considered gzela. You took this deposit, you put it in your rishus, so now you deny ever having it. That's considered theft. V'chein ha-choytef miyad chaveroi. That's the obvious example. Choytef means to grab. So too, obviously, when you grab something from your friend, then also have a gazlan. Kagoy, he brings a pasuk to demonstrate this by Yigzoy Lesachanis Miyad Hamitzri. Avol loive veloy shilein. If, however, he borrows money and he does not pay back, says Rashi, loy mikri gazlan. That's not called a gazlan. So a lender lent money to a borrower, says Rashi, if you don't pay back, obviously you're over an Issa, but that's not considered a gazlan. That's not considered a gazlan. Says Rashi, de milva lohoitsa'o nitna. Now, what does that mean? Milva lohoitsa'o nitna means a loan is given to be spent. So what does Rashi mean over here? It's true that when I lend you money, I don't expect the same $100 note to be returned to me. I'm more than happy that you should spend the $100 and give me back a different $100 note. That's true. That's what it means. Milver, a loan, lohitza'a, for spending, nitna has been given. But why does that mean that I'm not a gazlan when I refuse to pay back? What's that got to do with the fact that the money was given to be spent? That's true, but it was also given quite clearly on condition the money was going to be eventually returned. So if I don't return it, surely I should be considered a gazlan. Why is it relevant, that which Rashi points out, that the loan was given to be spent in the first place? Why is that important? Why is that relevant? How does that explain why it's not considered gezel? Does anybody have a pshat in this Rashi? Yeah, you hear the obvious question? Rashi tells you that a loan is there to be spent. That's true. But it definitely was given on condition that the money was going to be returned. And if I refuse to do so, surely I should be considered a gazlan. The answer is, every gezel has to have a maisa gezela. There has to be an act of theft.
Well, it's different from a gonev. A gonev takes things under surreptitiously. In other words,
that's true. But a ganav and a gazlan, the common denominator is that they both have to have an act. It cannot be done passively. Therefore, when you give me $100 and I go out and I spend it in the store, at that point, even though that is a maisa, but that's not considered gazela. Why is it not considered gazela? Because you absolutely allowed me to spend the money. It comes the end of the period of the loan, and now you want the money back, and I say I'm not paying. Obviously, I'm over an Issadoi Raisa. Obviously, that goes without saying. But I'm not a gazlan. Why am I not a gazlan? Because it's now passive rather than active. There is no Maisa gazela. The only Maisa that was ever done was the money being spent. And that Rashi points out the money was spent legally. So the mere denial, the mere refusal to pay, that's not considered a gazel. And if you go back to the beginning of the Rashi, now you understand what Rashi means when he says that when I deny a pikodoin, that's considered gazel. Why is that considered gazel? If you deposit some money with me and then you come back after your vacation and you say, can I have the money back? And I say, I don't know what you're talking about. So why is that gezel? There's no maisa. So Rashi explained, you're right, but when I misappropriated the money, that is considered gezel.
Maybe when the love accepted the money, he had in mind at the time not to pay it back, and so that was...
That's Rashi's chiddush. That's Rashi's chiddush. That's still not considered an act of gezel. When I grab money from somebody else, that's an act of gezel. Refusing to pay a loan is not considered an act of gezel. Make no mistake about it. It's an issa d'oraisa. He's absolutely, obviously, mechuyev to pay back min ha-Torah, but it's not considered gezel. Says Rashi, v'ha-chavolois, injuries, ha-choyvel b'chaveroi, chayev b'chamisha dvarim. This we all know. When one damages somebody else physically, one has to pay five different payments, kadarmina b'bava kama, it's all learned from Sukkim, v'ish ki yitein mumba amisoi, kein yas eloi b'momen, etc., etc. This is not our subject for the moment, but we all know this, that when one inflicts physical damage upon somebody else, so one has to pay damages, work loss, shame, etc., etc., etc. Says Rashi, this is the question that we referred to before, Uba Gemara Parich, and the Gemara is going to ask, Hainu Dinei Mamonis. Surely this is Dinei Mamonis. So why did you give me the introduction saying Dinei Mamonis Beshloisha, and then you tell me Gzeles Vechavolois? Those are Dinei Mamonis. So once you gave me the general rule, why on earth is it necessary then to go and detail Gzeles, Chavolos? Those are all examples of Dinei Mamonos. You've already given me the rule. You don't need to now give me the details. So as we have pointed out, my friends, hundreds and hundreds of time in our shiurim over the many years, whenever Rashi says of a Gemara Parech, it always means that yes, the question is a valid question. The question must be asked al derech hapshat, but don't examine it further at this point. If Rashi says that the Gemara will ask it, then we can rely very much on Rashi, that the Gemara will address it, and until such point, you can put the question aside and proceed, which is exactly what we're going to do now. Says the Mishnah in continuation, Nezek, Tashlumei Kefel, V'Tashlumei Arbo V'Chamisho, all of those cases are B'Shloisho. At three cases, again, Nezek, comma, Tashlumei Kefel, the double payment, and the quadruple and quintuple payment, four and five.
Nezek, V'Chamisho.
Yeah, you skipped Chatzi Nezek.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm on the first line. Nezek, v'chatzi Nezek, tashlumei kefel, v'tashlumei arba v'chamisha, ul b'shloisha. That's four cases. Again, the obvious question would have to be that those are surely all dinei mominis. So if they're all dinei mominis, why do you need to point out, once again, that they are b'shloisha? But let's see Rashi. What are they referring to at least? Says Rashi, the end of the third line, Nezek d'shoir hamud. Either an ox gored, or Adam shezikoi, or a person damaged, or the Gemara porich. Once again, the Gemara is going to ask, Hainu chavolis, that is chavolis. Chavolis is injury, that means one human inflicts damage on another. Rashi does not explain. So Rashi obviously expects us to know what it is. Chatzi Nezek, I think we all know what Chatzi Nezek is. When an ox gores, it only pays full damages after the third time. But the first few times, when it's not considered a muad, it's called a tam, it only pays Chatzi Nezek. Tashlumei Kefel, says Rashi on the fourth line. De Geneva Shenimtza Beyodoi, a stolen item which he denied. And then it was found to be in his property. Then you have to pay double. Diksiv imimotzi timotzi biyodoi, etc., etc. The tashkumi abova chamishim the shoyreise, an ox or a sheep shetov choyoi mechorai. We all know this as well. If you steal, but not only did you steal, you also slaughter or sell it, then there is a penalty payment. You've got to pay not just the initial value of the animal that you took, rather four or five times the original payment. So all of those cases, full damage, half damage, double damage, or four or five times damage, all of those cases must be adjudicated by a bezdin of three. Now, we're going to press pause on the Mishnah over here. Like I said, I don't think there's much point in going all the way through the Mishnah, because the Gemara that relates to it is going to be learned only many, many weeks' time. Suffice to say that the Mishnah continues with other cases that are not judged with three, but rather with 23, or in fact, the Beis Din HaGadol, 71. What all the various cases, they'll all have to be considered on their merit. One by one, we'll get there eventually. So we're going to jump a little bit, with your permission. Go now to the towards the bottom of the same page. The first word on the line, it's about nine lines from the bottom. The first word on the line is Shalosh.
Two boys this afternoon around 24:30.
If you have that first word, Sholosh, can you see halfway through the line? Sanhedrin Gedoila Hoysa Shel Shivim Ve'echod. The large Sanhedrin comprised of 71 Dayonim. V'ktano shel esrim v'shloisha. That also begs a question. If the large Sanhedrin is considered 71, and the small Sanhedrin is considered 23, so what is the Beis Din of three called? If you have large, it's not called large and medium, it's called large and small. So what's the Beis Din of three called? We'll have to work that out. Says the Mishnah. Minayin legedoyla shehi shel shivim ve'echad. Where do we get this magic number 71 from? Now the Mishnah does not relate to where do we get the magic number three from. That's not discussed over here. It's in fact a Gemara later on, which we'll see in a moment, either today or the beginning of next week. But the Mishnah does discuss where does the number 71 come from? Sanhedrin minayin legedoyla shehi shel shivim ve'echad. From where do we learn that you've got to have 71 on the Sanhedrin agadol? Shenema, because it is stated, this is a pasuk in Parshas Baal Yischa, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Esfoli shivim ish mizikne Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu says, gather for me 70 of the elders. In addition to that, Moshe al gabehen, and Moshe is overseeing them. So it's Moshe together with another 70. That is the magic number 71. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shevim. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says, if he says, I'm assembling 70 Zakenim, then they are the Beis Din. There's no reference in the Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu is overlooking them and combining forces, becoming part of the Beis Din. So there's just 70. That also needs discussion because, as we know, the famous rule, you cannot have an even number in a Beis Din. Because what are you going to do when there's a split decision? So how can a Beis Din possibly be 70 people? That is a discussion. But for the moment, let's consider the first opinion, which is that the Beis Din is 71 Dayon. Uminayin lektano shishal esrim mishleisha. And how do you know that the Beis Din aktano is not 71, rather is 23? Shenema, because it says, v'shoftu Ha'eda, the Beis Din shall judge the congregation, v'hitzilu ha'eda, and they should save the congregation. So the word Eda is mentioned twice. Eda shofetes, v'eda matzeles. The Beis Din is referred to as an Eda. The Eda judges and the Eda saves. Now, how much is an Eda? Eda is literally translated as a community or a congregation. But how many does that number? Says the Gemara, Harekan Estrim. Eda times 2 is 20. Because every individual Eda is 10. How do you know? Aminayin le'eda shehi asara. How do you know that an individual single Eda is 10? Shenema admosai lo Eda horo'o hazois. This is referring to the Meraglim, and it refers to the Meraglim as the Eda horo'o, the evil community. Now, how many were there in the Meraglim? As we all know, there were 12. Yotsu Yeshua v'kolev. Yeshua v'kolev clearly cannot be referred to as the evil community. So it was 12 minus 2, and that's how you get to 10. So the word Eda in the Torah always means 10 people. So if the Beis Din is considered 10 and 10, so far we're up to 20. Before we continue, let's see Rashi. It's toward the end of the sixth line. What does it mean that the community judges and the community saves? Says Rashi, Eidosh Lepetes Asora Machayvin. You have 10 Dayonim who are being Machayev. They might well consider a guilty verdict. The Eidom Matzeles Asora Mazakin. You might well have 10 who consider him Zakai, which means innocent. Ashmi'inon Kro, what the Pasuk is teaching is, Tzorech Eshrim, you've got to have a minimum of 20. It's going to be a little bit more, and we're going to see in a moment. She'im Yechalku, you are Sora Machayvin, va Sora Mazakin. So that if there will be Mechalku, what does it mean Yechalku? If there'll be a split Bezdin, then there can be at least, for example, 10 guilty and 10 innocent. Le'edo hara b'meraglim ksiv. This is written with regard to the meraglim. Now, back into the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, so far we're up to 20. The Bezdin is considered and is called an Edom. It says the word Edom twice. We learn from the meraglim that Edom means 10. 2 times 10 is 20. Says the Mishnah, o minayin la'avi oid shloisha. So how do you know to bring another 3? Where'd you get the number 23 from? Maybe a Bezdin is indeed just 20. So the Gemara says we can prove it from the Psukim because there are some difficult Psukim. Mimashma shenema, once it is written, Loi siye achare rabim l'ro'ois. The Pasuk tells us, with regard to Bezdin, literally translated, do not follow the majority l'ro'ois. For bad. I have to see what that means. Shemeya ani she'eye imohem l'toivo. Don't follow the majority for bad. So surely that means, I can infer, that you do follow the majority for good. Meaning, when I've got a Bezdin, whatever the Bezdin is, whether it's 3 or 23 or 71, who tells us that you don't need a unanimous decision? Maybe if somebody's brought to Bezdin, it's only if you get 100% in one particular direction, that's enough. But maybe a split decision, even if it's a roiv, is not enough. So if the Torah tells us, do not follow the majority l'ro'o. Don't follow the majority for bad. So surely I can infer from there that I do, however, follow the majority for good, which is another way of saying that at least to consider him innocent, to acquit him, you follow the majority. I don't need a unanimous decision. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Mimash mashanema. Once the Torah writes, lo yisiach rab l'rois, so I can automatically infer from there, shemeya ani, so I hear from that, that I should be with them, with who? With the majority, for good. In Cain, if that's the case, Lomo Nemar Achare Rabim Lahatois, quote unquote. So why does the Torah then need to write, Achare Rabim Lahatois, you follow the majority? I've already inferred that from the first half of the Pasuk. Because if it says, don't follow the majority for bad, so I know that you do follow them for good. The answer is, loy kahatoyoscho. Achrei rabim lahatois means you lean in that direction, you veer towards them. Loy kahatoyoscho l'toivo. The way that you veer towards toiv is not the same as hatayos cholera, the way you would veer to bad. Meaning, a majority verdict, one way or another, does that always suffice? The answer is, it depends whether it's l'toiv or l'ra, says the Gemara, I'll explain. Hatayos cholera, when you are veering towards good, what does good mean? Meaning to be mezakehim, to consider him innocent, then I'll pi echod. Even if there is a majority of just one. It could be the slimmest majority that will suffice. However, hatayos cholera al pishnayim. But you've got to have at least a differential of two to for the majority for ra'a. Ra'a, when we consider it ra'a, evil, doesn't mean literally evil. It means to consider him guilty. So do we follow the majority in all cases? The answer is yes, we do, but it's not the same type of majority. To consider him innocent, a majority of one will suffice. To consider him guilty, at least two. Turn over the page. Ve'ein beizdin shokul. But you cannot have an equal bezdin, meaning an even number. Moisifim aleim oid echot. Therefore, you add one. Harikan esrim v'shleisha. So let's explain. We've said a bezdin has to consist of an eidah and an eidah. You've got to, in theory, be able, you don't always have to have this case, but you've got to be able to have 10 saying innocent and 10 saying guilty, which means you've got to have 20 dayonim to start with. Now, in order to actually finally rule that he's going to be innocent, a majority of one will suffice. So in theory, 21 dayonim would be okay, because 10 can say guilty, 11 can say innocent, and that would suffice. But that's not the end of the story. Why? Because in order to consider him guilty, however, I've got to have a majority of two. So 21 will not be good enough. I've got to have 22. But you can't have an even number. Therefore, you've got to have 23. So if I have 23 dayanim altogether, what would be the case? Therefore, what's the halacha? If 12 consider him guilty and 11 innocent, you would not consider him guilty, even though there's a majority, but there's no majority of two. Whereas in the reverse situation, when I have 12 saying innocent and 11 saying guilty, then that would be okay. Because any type of majority, even the thinnest majority, is enough. And that's why the Torah is saying, Loi si achri rabim lerois, achri rabim lahatos. Why are you telling me the same thing twice? The answer is because the majority required is not the same for Ra'a as it is for Toiv. In the case of Ra'a, you need a majority of at least two, if not more. In the case of Toiv, a majority of one would suffice.
But if you had 20 and 20 and 21 held Ra'a, that would leave 19 for Tov, and that gives you the two majority, the margin of two. So why couldn't we stick with 20 and
20? Because I've always got to have a possibility of having 10 innocent and 10 guilty.
Uh-huh.
Because Eidah and Eidah. The Shoftu Eidah, the Hitzilu Eidah. Shoftu means we judge them, we consider them guilty. The Hitzilu means we save them, we're trying to acquit them. So I don't always have to have 10 innocent and 10 guilty, but I've always got to have the possibility of 10 innocent and 10 guilty. And after that, the majority will kick in.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's some Rashi that we need to learn. We're going to run out of time. So, Imitz Hashem, next. Yeah, Reb Nachum.
This man, can Rebbe kind of end each year with what we're going to be doing the next year, whether it's a Tosfos, not a Tosfos? Because okay, last man, there wasn't real good hadracha for like what we should be doing.
Okay, so let's start straight away. We're running out of time, so let's quickly do this. Be'ez Hashem, the first thing we'll do, which will be on Sunday morning, Be'ez Hashem, is learn the Rashis that we just missed out, which is at the bottom of the Amud, base Amud Aleph, and the top of base on a base, and then we will finish the Mishnah. Following that, we will launch into Gemara. Now, many of these Tosafim, almost all of them, we will not be learning for the moment, even though we like to learn as many Tosafim as we can, but the Tosafim here really are veering off in different directions. So we're going to continue the Gemara right down to the bottom, and then going over the Omer. For the moment, Gemara Rashi, do not learn Tosafim yet.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, all being well, okay. With regard to the Parasha Shir, we will not be resuming tonight. All being well, maybe next week, although Rabbi Jacobson is making a wedding on Wednesday night, so we'll have to see.
Right.
Either way, it will not be tonight, so stay tuned for further details.
Okay, shikoach.
All the best. Have a good chodesh.
Good chodesh.